This morning I want to consider the topic of violence. If you were asked the question, is violence wrong? What would your answer be? Before we answer, maybe we ought to spend just a moment defining the word. What does the word violence mean? Here's a definition from Oxford's Dictionary. Behavior involving physical force intended to hurt, damage, or kill someone or something. So, you go fishing. You take a very sharp little instrument called a hook. You put a worm on it to deceive. You drop it in the water, and a fish gets hooked. And that hurts. But it's just the beginning. You pull him up, and if he's the kind of fish you want to eat, you cut his head off. That's violence. The word violence actually comes from a Latin word that means strength or force. So you've used strength and force not simply to capture that fish or an animal, if you hunt squirrel or deer, but to end their life. Is violence wrong? You say, I'm talking about using strength or force to hurt or injure a human. Okay? What about war? Your nation's attacked, as our nation was in 1941. The nation went to war. 1945, two bombs were dropped where thousands of lives were lost. God, in fact, commanded His people to go to war. That's violence, by this definition. Is it wrong? In the middle of the night, you hear a noise. And there's an intruder in your house. And you pull a gun. You may have to use it. That's violence, according to this definition. Is it wrong? There's another part to this definition, and it's prefaced with the word law, L-A-W. What it means is that in law, here's what the word means. The unlawful exercise of physical force. Now that's what I meant. The unlawful exercise of physical force. Okay? I'm reading here from Proverbs chapter 23, verse 13. It says, do not hold back discipline from the child, although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. You will strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. If a parent chooses to use corporal discipline, and whatever this was, the kid thought he was going to die. But he won't die. Used properly, you can rescue that child. Suppose for a moment that there was a law in our land, as there is in some countries, and it's against the law to use corporal punishment to discipline your child. So it would be unlawful use of force for you to spank your child. Would you? Now that's violence. That's using force, strength. And yet, if you did that in the proper attitude and way, you would actually be obeying God in that violent act. Over in Genesis chapter 9, and in verse 6, here's a command that God gave early on, should be applicable for all time, all people. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For the image of God he made man. We call it capital punishment. That's a use of force. The fellow's not going to agree to go sit in the electric chair or have a noose hung around his neck or to let people throw stones at him until he dies. And yet, capital punishment is what God implemented to curb some violence. And so here's something we could call violence. Is it wrong? Now, there are people who say it's wrong. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. I think it's wrong not to practice it. Over in Numbers chapter 35, Numbers chapter 35, and these laws for ancient Israel. Remember, they didn't have the police force you're familiar with. They didn't have prisons at this time, like we have them. And in Numbers chapter 34, beginning in verse 16, 35, I'm sorry, verse 16, if he struck him down with an iron object so that he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. Not just be put to death, shall surely be put to death. You have the same thing at the end of verse 17. You have the same thing at the end of verse 18. Put the murderer to death. Who? Read the next verse, 19. The blood avenger. So you may be the blood avenger. That may have been done to one of your family members. You're the blood avenger. The blood avenger himself shall put the murderer to death. He shall put him to death when he meets him. Would you call that violence? There was violence in the murder, but there was violence in the thing that would be done to the murderer. Force and strength would be used to take the man's life. Over in Romans, the 13th chapter, you say, well, that's the Old Testament. Well, let's go to the New Testament. In Romans chapter 13, and in verse 4, the apostle said that governing authorities, what the context is, it is a minister of God, serving God. Now, what he's going to talk about. A minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it, that is civil government, does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger on who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. A sword to avenge your fellow citizens who have been mistreated. Using a sword to bring God's wrath on the evildoer. Is that violent? That's God's plan for government. Hopefully, we have at least advanced to this point. Wrong is not inherent in the word violence. It's not necessarily a connotation of the word violence. Our own innate moral standard says that, whether you ever heard of a Bible, when the intruder comes in your house. And we've also seen that God, our Creator, testifies to the fact that all violence is not necessarily wrong. The fact is this: lack of anything that may be called violent in a society to deal with the issues that arise will lead to a chaotic and violent society where men exercise their force and strength against their fellow man to harm, to steal, to ruin, to kill, to rob. For a society to function in peace, to have some kind of standard by which people can enjoy life, there must be some force in place against the evildoer. But when you talk about using force and strength, you're going back to the idea of violence. Someone may respond, but I'm talking about unlawful violence. Okay. Here's our next question. What law? According to Hitler's law, it was all right to murder Jews. And he murdered, multiplied thousands of them. So that was not unlawful violence according to Hitler's law. According to gang law, you can steal, you can destroy, you can plunder, and whatever else is necessary to achieve the gang goal. In fact, some gangs require it to be part of the gang. So according to gang law, it's not unlawful to steal your neighbor's property, to break into his house or burn his building down. Ignorant husbands and parents think it is lawful to abuse their family, their wife, or their children, and do not consider it therefore unlawful. I'm the king of my castle. I rule here. I'll do with my wife, or as a father and mother, I'll do with my children as I wish. And so when you say, what I meant by unlawful violence still really does not help us with this issue. We've got to move further. We've got to have a standard that rises above me and rises above you, rises above the fellow who wants to hurt me or hurt you. That standard is divine law. He is the creator of you and me and the evildoer, people of any place or any race or any language. And it's His law that determines whether the use of force or strength is lawful. In Matthew chapter 22, Jesus was asked by the lawyer, what is the great commandment in the law? And he says, the first is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on those, these two hang all the law, or depend all the law and the prophets. While Jesus was speaking a Jew to Jews, those two laws are applicable to every man and woman that breathes, of every age, of every continent, makes no difference. This is the universal divine law that's been in place before there was a Bible, when man first stepped upon this earth. Love God first, and love your fellow man as yourself. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, after the writer had considered man's life under the sun or upon the earth and how to spend his time and his energies and his possessions, he had this concluding statement at the end of the book. Verse 13, the conclusion, when all has been heard, it is, fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. That's the New American Standard rendering. Some say this is the whole duty of man. Either way you take it. The point is, it applies to every single individual. This is the conclusion. Whatever you do with your property, however you treat your family, however you use your time or your position, the conclusion is, fear God and keep His commandments. Read the next verse, which begins with a for. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. That applies to every man, every woman, every boy, every girl, of any continent, any race, any religion. So the use of the force or energy to gain possessions, to take possessions, to enjoy life. You're talking about enjoying life. You're going to answer to God at the end. So His law reigns supreme. In Job chapter 28, Job is talking about wisdom and how it's inaccessible. It's beyond the reach of mankind. Ultimate wisdom. But then in verse 28, now remember, Job predates the law. If he doesn't, he certainly doesn't appeal to the law as the Old Testament law as the standard. But very possibly even predates the law. And he says, back in verse 23, God understands its way. God has this wisdom I'm talking about. And then he says in verse 28, to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. That's where it starts. To fear the Lord, the Creator of man and woman, of all mankind. In Job 31, I'll not read the chapter. If you haven't read it in a while, I encourage you to read it. It's a chronicle of his moral integrity. He talks about purity of heart and conduct sexually. He talks about the fair treatment of those who work for him. He talks about practicing hospitality. He talks about honesty and truthfulness in all his dealings. It's a great, great chapter. Where does that spring from? Said the law of Moses. I don't know that it existed. He certainly doesn't reference it. Christianity. Christianity wasn't born. It inheres in these two great laws. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That defines what is lawful or unlawful in the use of force. So, violence that violates divine law is sin. S-I-N. It's wrong. And men will be held accountable for it. If we understand this, we can avoid being intimidated. You know, you take your child, you discipline your child. There's even sometimes people in the church that will take it upon themselves to reprove parents who discipline their children. I know it for a fact. Don't be intimidated. It's not their law that determines what's violently wrong. It's God's law. Don't be intimidated by that. We understand this principle. The same is true, for example, about law and order of a civil society. That there are appointed people by our government to use force and strength, the sword, to keep evil men from hurting other men. And that force may involve deadly force. So that's violent. Yes. But it's a violence that is authorized and needed when exercised according to God's will. Don't be intimidated by people who say, well, that's violence and violence is wrong. Look at Jonah. Jonah chapter 3. Nineveh, the capital of the Syrian Empire. They weren't Jews. They weren't under the law of Moses. But look at Jonah chapter 3. Jonah goes into town and starts preaching about the judgment of God upon them. Look down at verse 8. Both man and beast must be covered with sackcloth. This is what the king tells his people. And let men call on God earnestly, that each may turn from his wicked way and from the, what? Violence that is in their hands. The king of Nineveh understood there was a violence that was against the God of heaven's laws, not the law of Moses. Here you have your two great laws. And understanding that helps reveal why we need Christ. But since we've talked about violence being a violation of divine law, let's look at some specifics. I'm going to start with Genesis 6, which is a little bit more general, but it is informative. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Stop with me just a moment. How do you define what's evil? By what your culture is? Your group? Your family? Does that not point to the fact there was a law in place that rose above society? Yes, there was. And we've read them. God says men do evil. Look down in the text now. Here at Genesis chapter 6 and verse 11. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God. Now I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. And it says the earth was filled with violence. Now isn't that interesting? Up in verse 5, men's heart did evil, thought about evil. Here it says the earth was filled with violence. They used the strength and energy they had to do what was wrong and forced that upon maybe their families, maybe their fellow man, maybe their employees, whatever it may be. What did God think about it? Oh, well. It'll pass in time. No. Listen to verse 13. Enough time had passed. God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me. For the earth is filled with violence because of them. And behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. And one of the most momentous events ever to occur on this planet happened. The flood, because of violence. Doing evil before God. Now look at Genesis 49. Look at Genesis 49 and verse 5. When Jacob is blessing his son, he says about two of his boys, Simeon and Levi, their brothers, their swords are implements of violence. See, it's wrong to use a sword. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. There were times God wanted men to use a sword to take a man's life. And we've already read in Romans 13, civil authorities do not bear the sword for nothing. But here he says these two boys use their sword as implements of violence. What in the world did they do? Go back to chapter 34. Go back to chapter 34. You remember Shechem had somehow persuaded Dinah. He loved her, persuaded her, young girl, to give herself to him. And so her brothers were incensed as if they were self-righteous. Sometimes people get so incensed, so we're going to render justice. And these were some of the most corrupt young men. The hypocrisy sometimes of rendering justice is so shameful. But anyway, they had a plan to cause the men of Shechem to be where they could overpower them. And so in verse 25 it says, now it came about on the third day, these men had been circumcised. They said, they told them you had to do that to get this girl. So when they were in pain, that two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came upon the city unawares and killed every male. They began to just slaughter people. Now there were times God authorized killing people. He didn't this time. They took it upon themselves. In verse 26, it says, they killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the edge of the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house. So I'll take the woman. Happened to be their sister this time. In fact, I kill you to get her. And then, in verse 27, Jacob's sons came upon the slain and looted the city. Verse 28, they took their flocks and their herds and their donkeys, that which was in the city, that which was in the field. They captured and looted all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives and even all that was in their houses. Murder. Taking what you want. Looting and stealing and robbing. Now that violence is condemned by divine law. And there's nothing men can say that can justify it. So, well, I was treated badly, so it's okay. No, it's not okay. Dinah was not treated maybe as they thought she should, so they could say, well, our sister was treated badly, so. No, it's wrong. It's unlawful. I'm not going to read Deuteronomy 24. You can take your notes if you want to read it later. It's kidnapping. Violence in the form of kidnapping is condemned. In Judges 9:24, again, you can read the previous verses back up in verse 4 through 5. It was indiscriminate taking of life, again, for selfish purposes. And that was called violence. I do want to look at 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2. David is about to die and he's giving instructions to his son Solomon. And here in 1 Kings chapter 2 and in verse 8, he said, behold, there is with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite of Bahurim. Now, it was he who cursed me with a violent curse on the day when I came to Mahanaim. A violent curse. And he told Solomon, render justice. What is this violent curse? Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 16. 2 Samuel chapter 16. The setting is political. Politics has to do with who rules. Absalom was trying to steal the throne. In 2 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 5. When David came to Bahurim, behold, there came out from there a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came out cursing continually as he came. You see people today on television using so bad language they have to bleep it out. He threw stones at David. He threw stones at him. Remember, this is political circumstances. He threw stones at David and all the servants of King David. Verse 7, thus Shimei said when he cursed, get out, you man of bloodshed, you worthless fella. As if David was a murderer and no good, that's slander. Had David killed people? Yes. By God's authority, to indicate he was a man who had no regard for human life, was slander. Remember 1 Kings 2:8. It's a violent curse. That's wrong violence. Even if it is to justify a political agenda. Hosea chapter 4, I'll not read it. It'd be good for you to read because in the first verse there's a contrast between verse 1 and 2. And it gives you a further sense of what was called violence. I want to go to Obadiah. Obadiah is only one chapter, of course. And it's particularly interesting because it pictures the attitude of a group of people, Edomites, against people who were quote-unquote their brothers. They had a relationship that went back years. And there was what the Bible calls everlasting enmity between them. Years passed, 100 years passed. This bitterness continued down through the years. Finally, it comes time for their enemy to be judged, which is Judah, the Jews. And the judgment was brought by God. But it's very interesting now, God's judgment, not upon Judah here, but upon the Edomites. Listen, look at Obadiah verse 10. Because of violence done to your brother Jacob, you'll be covered with shame, you'll be cut off forever. What do you mean, what violence? On the day that you stood aloof, on the day that strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gate, and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were as one of them. Not that they went and did it, but boy, they were there in heart. I'm glad it's happening to them. Do not gloat over your brother's day, the day of his misfortune, and do not rejoice over the sons of Judah in the day of their destruction. Yes, do not boast in the day of their distress. And you have that again in 13. You have that again there two more times in verse 13. The day of their disaster. So I didn't like those people anyway. I'm glad they're getting this mistreatment. I'm glad they're getting hurt. I'm not doing it, but I'm glad. Wrongful violence. It's right there in the text. One more passage. Look at Acts chapter 21. Acts chapter 21. People saw Paul in the temple and they began to stir up the crowd. This is going to be mob violence. You're going to read about here. Mob violence. And so, verse 28, they said, this is the man who preaches to all men everywhere against our people and the law of this place. Mob violence takes a little truth and twists it to misrepresent. That's what they did. Paul didn't do that. That's not all. It says, he even brought Greeks into the temple and defiled this holy place. For they had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian in the city with him, and they supposed, there was no proof of this. Paul didn't do this. They supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. And now they're getting people all riled up. And boy, when mob violence starts building, it's hard to stop. And there's oftentimes no objectivity and no reason. And so it says, then the city was provoked. The people rushed together and taking hold of Paul, they dragged him out of the temple and immediately the doors were shut while they were seeking to kill him. They wanted to kill him. But a Roman cohort came and rescued him. And at the end of verse 32, when they saw the commander of the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. They were beating him. Maybe had him on the ground, kicking him. Who knows? Verse 35, when he got to the stairs, he was carried by the soldiers. Imagine, he had to be protected from the mob by the soldiers. Because of what? What does the text say? The violence of the mob. There's mob violence. It's wrong by divine law. Men who practice violence are going to get more than they bargained for. Because they're going to suffer a violent end. It's described by Jesus in one place where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's described in another story that Jesus told about a man who said, I'm in torment in this flame. And in another discourse, Jesus described it as eternal punishment. That's violence. But it's just. Christ offers freedom from the violence of guilt and shame, the ruin that it has brought into our lives, the turmoil it causes within our heart. Not only now, but He offers freedom from that violence for eternity. Through His blood and sacrifice, He offers peace and rest and comfort and joy and the favor of God. That's what He preached a long time ago. But I still have that hope because of the song we're going to sing. I know that my Redeemer lives. May God be praised as together we stand.